Unarmored Talk Podcast, episode 34. Feeling guilty because I survived. With today's guest, Mike Lamposen, Sergeant Major retired, United States Marine Corps. And please remember to subscribe to my YouTube channel at Mario P. Fields YouTube to watch this episode and previous episodes. And don't forget to leave a rating and review on the Unarmored Talk page on Apple Podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Unarmored Talk Podcast, where we will have real life conversations that hopefully helps you develop an accurate way of thinking. The way we're going to do this is by gaining a better understanding of how emotions, feelings, and thoughts can influence the outcome of a personal or professional challenge. I'm your host, Mario P. Fields, and today's guest is Mike Lamposen. He's the program manager at Warrior Scholar Project. He's a veterans advocate for higher education, and he is a sergeant major retired out of the United States Marine Corps. He did 67 years of honorable service. He looks great. Mike, welcome to Unarmored Talk Podcast.
Mario P. Fields, earth shattering, bone crushing, the motivated, extraordinaire, and combat warrior. Podcast host, producer, small business owner, family man, Marine community leader extraordinaire, again, a legend and a giant among giants. Brother, I am humbled to be here with you. So thanks so much for the opportunity to be here.
You know, a lot of people probably think I gave you some money under the table. I transferred it to your Navy Fed account. I didn't do that.
No, I love it. You know, I appreciate the introduction, and I got to give it right back to you because, man, watching you and listening to you is very inspirational. And, you know, some people say, hey, I want to be like you when I grow up. So I appreciate that, man.
No, I appreciate it. Well, I'm 5'2", so they don't want to grow down. So, you know, but hey, tell the listeners and viewers a little bit about yourself, my friend.
Yeah, as you said, man, you know, like, retired after 30 years from the Marines. It was an honor and to serve with some of the finest men and women in this country. And I'm happy and glad to be able to continue to serve and give back to the veteran community in that working as a program manager for the Warrior Scholar Project, where we help transitioning service members from the battlefield into academia. Basically, you know, you look at it, of the 200,000 service member that gets out every year, about 100,000 would pursue higher education. And, you know, guys like you and I, at least for me, I've been out of school for 20, 30 years, and thinking about pursuing higher education can be very intimidating. Mm-hmm. So what the Warrior Scholar Project does is we boost their confidence. We immerse them in that college environment. Give them college successes, seminars, host a boot camp at some of the top 21 universities throughout the nation. And then it's kind of like that boost program that we have, right? Teach them about humanities, analytical reading, writing, study habits, transition from the green side into the college side. So it really, you know, it inform them. And most of all, it builds that confidence and they become a better consumer of higher education. So that's what we're all about. But personally, well, you know, before that, I'm next to the youngest of five brothers and five sisters, growing up in a small village, man. But, you know, look at all the necessities that we have today, right? Internet, TV, Wi-Fi, running, flushing water, toilets and all that stuff. We didn't have all that stuff growing up. So I was running around barefooted. You know, you have to go out and find your own food, right, in order for you to survive. And just a little piece of a personal side in that I remember probably when I was like maybe 8 years old and it was my turn to take the water buffaloes out to graze in the rice paddies. And I guess I was having a bad day or something. I was being lazy. So I was like, I'm not doing it today. So my brother started chasing me around, you know, around the village. And then I was trying to duck under some barbed wire and it got caught up in my eye, got a scar from my eye right here from trying to run away. So needless to say, they got me. They wrapped me up, tied me up under the house where the buffaloes sleep, and they left me there for a couple hours, man. So from there on, you know, it taught me a lesson. Hey, don't run away from your responsibility, buddy, because you're going to get caught. So that's why I joined the Marine Corps, because I've heard that of the, you know, the discipline and the motivation and all the intangible skills that you'll get from the Marine Corps will be so awesome, right?
Yeah.
You know, so here we are 30 years later, and still happy and proud to be a part of this organization and be able
to. So you started off as a warrior, right? Got some wounds in action, you know, growing up, and learned some valuable lessons. And so let's talk about, you know, wounds in action, if you will. And that's wounds you can see and things you can't see. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Mike, you've got a couple of combat tours, one in Iraq and one in Afghanistan, and some other challenges during your 30-year journey in the Marine Corps. But let's jump right into the topic. You know, today folks see this 6'7", you're very professional program manager, right, at Warrior Scholar Project, dad, brothers, right? Family man, businessman, very polished. But I think what they don't see is what type of wounds did you incur from your combat tours? You want to talk about anything specific, and, you know, let's get into it.
Yeah, Mario, it's a difficult topic to talk about. And it's one that we rarely, at least me personally, rarely talk about it. But, you know, I appreciate you bringing up the topic. Yeah, you know, I had the opportunity to deploy to Afghanistan back in 2008, 2009 with 3MEF, with a special purpose MAGTAF-A there. And prior to that, I was all privileged to deploy to Iraq twice, to Ramadi, both times with 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines. And it was a tough deployment. 05, 06 deployment was rough, man. It was one of those where we were in constant engagement throughout the 7 months that we were there. So you talk about the wounds, the fact that we were there and we were in constant tick. I mean, just to give you an example, right? The challenge for me in talking about it and looking back and reflecting is like, you know, how after experiencing so many near death experience and witnessing the courageous actions of your Marines, I was a first sergeant, right? During that time, Lima Company, 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines, and seeing the actions of the courageous men and women, the men that I had the privilege to serve with, and seeing their wounds and, you know, putting on tourniquets and doing the medevacs and putting Marines in body bags and seeing the trauma, it obviously it has an effect on you, right? And you constantly think about it. And looking back at those experience and putting in perspective now is like, hey, life isn't that bad. Like the challenges that we meet today, and me personally, I always tell my kids or my coworkers or whoever I'm talking to, I say, hey, look, it's not that bad. Right? Whatever you're dealing with right now, it's not bad, because you're not getting blown up. You're not getting shot at. Nobody's losing their life today. So relax. Let's just enjoy life and embrace the moment is how I reflect back at that, at that deployment.
Yeah, Mike, and I appreciate you removing your armor to talk about this. And you mentioned, you know, you guys were in constant troops in contact. And for my non-military listener viewers, that means that there's gunfire, right? There's gunfire, mortars, but bottom line, it's very chaotic when you're in, like Mike had said previously, a tick. But you're here you are, you know, the Marines of 3-7, I believe are like family to you. Your first sergeant, they're like your brothers, and you're starting to see injuries and death and you know, and maiming. What emotions did you experience during this, or you know, depression, sadness? And how did you deal with those emotions during this Ramadi deployment?
Yes. Yeah. Shout out to all the warriors of the brothers of the Blade, the Cutting Edge, 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines. Like you said, they're our family. It's one of, you know, of my 30 years of service. That's probably one of the most fond memory is my time with them, even though all of my units have been very special and unique. But this one, just the experience alone, you know, the emotions, man. Listen, the adrenaline is pumping, right? As soon as we get on deck in Ramadi, we're ripping out relief in place, right? With Charlie 1-5 was at at Snake Pit as our firm base. It's right just on the outskirt of the city there. And it's almost like a checkpoint that runs through there. But we're doing our left seat, right seat with Charlie 1-5. Not even two nights of being in country, we get this 120 mic round come right through our CP. And by the grace of God, you know, that it didn't detonate. It came through the next door over where my office was at. I'm sitting here with my company commander. We're talking about the plan of the day. We had our Marine standing in front of my desk, talking about the satellite radio, how to, you know, navigate it, how to fix it and stuff like that, or how to properly make the calls. And we hear this explosion, boom. I'm like, what the heck's going on? What was that? Because I'm familiar with that sound because I'm a combat engineer by trade and right. I taught explosions and all that stuff. But a 120 mic had come through the roof, bounced off the rebar next door, blew out that room. It bounced through the wall, went right behind that Marine's head, probably by near inches, Mario. I mean, I'm talking like near inches.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the Marine and he just turns pale white. It bounced off the wall behind him, ricochet off where the company commander was sitting at my footlocker, and it ended up behind my desk, just laying there.
Wow.
So just imagine, brother, like after realizing what had happened that day, and then you're sitting back reflecting back on it, it's like, whew, wow. Think of what could have really happened if that thing, if the tail fin didn't break off when it came through the ceiling, right? There were just so many incidents of that, right? I mean, the emotion is, and we were home, like the five people in the CP immediate vicinity of it, we wouldn't even be here right now if a miracle wouldn't have happened.
Right.
I'm talking like, brother, I'm talking like incident like that, where we got blown up with daisy chain IEDs, where Marines, half the Humvees would get blown up, but the Marines would be okay.
Right.
You know what I mean? Even though they would suffer some kind of other traumas, but just the thought of almost losing your life so many times, and the Marines that have lost their lives there, you really don't understand the emotions.
Yeah.
Sadness,
fear. And Mike, how would you say the multiple experiences of near death situations during that 7-month deployment, including, you know, when you almost got blown up by a 120 millimeter, pretty much bomb. How would you say, what do you believe, or what do you think the effects of those have had on you during that deployment? And now looking back per se on that particular, those incidents.
Yeah. Thanks for digging into that, man.
Yeah.
During the deployment, Mario, it was a day on and stay on, right, brother? In that we had a mission. So there was really no time to collect and think about, you know, hey, as soon as that event happened, guys, we got to go back out. Let's go do this. You know, we got some more route to go clear. We got to go do this patrol and all that stuff. So for another example, you know, about a month into our deployment, we were doing a night raid and one of our 7-ton flipped over into the canal with, full of Marines. So we had several injured. So they call for the medevac. Of course, you know, the company First Sharon and the medevac team, the QRF would have to go out and evacuate the wounded. So we get out there, we get hit with small arms fire, some indirect fires coming in, consolidates the casualties. And now we're pushing back to Charlie Med, which is in Camp Ramadi. It's a small expeditionary hospital called Charlie Med. As we're coming back, boom, daisy chain IEDs go off again, you know, blowing out the windshield of the CAS evac vehicles, off all vehicles in the convoy, got flat tires. Check the casualties in the back of the medevac vehicle. Everybody seems to be okay. So we kept pushing. So, it, you know, incidents like that, you go check in on your wounded at the expeditionary hospital, gather their stuff. If we need to evacuate there, you know, if they need to be medevac out to Germany or back to the States. And then every time you have to, you know, inventory all the gear, and then you got to ship it back to the rear. So it was constant that. So to your point about what was it like during the deployment, we try to do things in between the missions to kind of like take the Marines' mind away from their experience, really. So we do, you know, try to do recreational stuff whenever we can. We got a gym, we did poker tournament, we built a volleyball net. Yeah. During the Christmas time frame, we did like a little flag football tournament just to get their minds off things. But then boom, you got to click back in and get right back into the mission mode.
Right. Where, you know, you mentioned you were first sergeant. So a lot of times I believe that you were, you know, like you mentioned, you were doing things for the younger Marines to get their minds focused. But how did that impact you? In other words, you know, was there a moment where you like, you know, what emotions, you know, what did you, you know, did you have any doubt, you know, did you think about your family and you know, and how did it impact you? You know, and you mentioned earlier too, you had adrenaline, which I think that was very important to mention.
I would say, honestly, you know, at that level, and you've been there as a company first sergeant deployed in a combat environment, yeah. Is that you really held, I held a lot of stuff in.
Yeah.
You had to. I mean, at least I keep saying you had to, but I had to, because you really couldn't share that with your Marines, right? In that leadership position. So I held a lot of stuff, a lot of emotions was in there. I can't really share it with your company commander, because you got to keep his mind focused as well. And the other company, First Sergeant, or the other companies were off in their little battle space. So we really, there were no time to connect and reflect with anybody. Although we had chaplains that came in, but you know, as a leader of Marines, man, you can't let those emotions out just yet, right? So you held all, everything was bottled in. And I would say, honestly say that, brother, it's still kind of like bottled up in there.
Yeah.
For over probably 15 years.
And when would you say that you started to, you know, did a family member or anyone, when would you say that those emotions start to leak out, right? And I'll use a cliche, a leak out, because no matter what, you can't keep everything in. Something's going to come out. So at what moment did you or someone notice that things are starting to, come out?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So when we came back, you know, I can go on and on about all the other incidents in Ramadi 05, 06. Yeah, every month there was a major incident. But what I would like to do now is maybe talk about, you know, coming back after the deployment. Did things started to leak out yet? No, it didn't, because guess what, 3-7, you guys are going back here in a few months, so you're going to have to, like, do your pre-deployment training. So you got to, you know, retrain the new Marines that are checking into your unit and get them ready to push out. So we went back in less than a year back to Ramadi, but now I'm a weapons company, First Sergeant now. So, you know, more our area of responsibility just kind of expanded as far as the AO and Ramadi. But that deployment was almost like a healing process, because after we were there less than a year ago, seeing all the chaos and the combat coming back, you know, we clean up the roads, we open up banks, we open up the schools. They even had like a 5K down the route Michigan, where previous deployment, it was constant IEDs and constant gunfights. But now, you know, everything's starting to open up. So I feel like it was a blessing to be able to go back and see the change, right, just knowing that, you know, the sacrifice of the previous deployment, the death and the wounded, the mission didn't go in vain, and that we were making progress. So it was very healing, but the emotions were still tied up in there.
Yeah.
So when we came back from that deployment, we were already PCSing to another duty station. And when we got to the next unit, we were ramping up to go on to Afghanistan. So it wasn't, you know, we didn't really have quite the time to process and let the emotions out a little bit. But, you know, I got a wonderful wife, Cam. She recognized the change. And
what was that, Mike? You know, a lot of, you know, again, people will talk about a change, or they'll say, you know, it's like, for instance, for me, it was significantly increased drinking. I mean, significantly.
Okay.
So if you could, for our listeners and viewers, get a little bit more in detail, what was that change? You know, what was, you know, just name one.
It was a personality, man. It was, you know, irritability.
Yeah.
Short tempered, right? And emotional outbursts. And you see that very more emotional, like you're watching a TV show or something comes up, and then you're like, all of a sudden tears will come. I'm like, what? We never had that before, you know?
And I'm laughing.
What is this nasty stuff?
And I'm laughing with you, because you just brought comfort to me. Because I'm like, okay, I feel normal. But no.
Yeah. Yeah, I was very emotional, and then to your point, and the alcohol too. I mean, yeah, it was an increase in alcohol, so we recognized that. So I started, getting treatment. Yeah. I seek treatment at the Naval Hospital, and that helped. That helped. But then the treatment helped, temporary help, but we had to put our packs back on, and we were deployed again. So you didn't really have a chance to let everything out just yet, until like after my last deployment in Afghanistan. Then I was blessed enough to go to Okinawa, and we were there for 5 years. And that's where we really got into the Intrepid Spirit program there, and to help out with the, you know, the behavioral health and also the physical pain that was going on. So,
you know, Mike, and I like how you made a choice. You made a choice to seek help, right? You made a choice to listen to your wife, and to say, why am I crying? You know, over this commercial, what the heck? And you made a choice, which is honorable, to go get help after you had a chance to slow down from your deployments. I believe that that's critical for our listeners and viewers, and especially those who have those emotions bottled up and still bottled up. It's a choice, and you're looking at an amazing Marine, right, and professional who made that choice to get help. After you started to get help, did you get any feedback from anyone outside of your wife, like children, cousins, friends, that noticed the change for the better?
No, I think we kind of internalize it. I internalize it a little bit, and that, you know, I personally, I felt like it was helping, right, with the lack of sleep, if you will, the sleeplessness nights, and the constant turning over and yelling and screaming in the middle of the night. You know, waking up shaking and stuff like that. It eased that a little bit. But the other emotions that I'd like to share with you, Mario, and I feel that is still somewhat bottled up. And, you know, it's again, it's very difficult to talk about, but the guilt, the guilt that you have as a leader, as far as looking back and reflecting on, man, I could have done more. You know what I mean? The Marines that were injured, what did I really do everything I could to make that situation better? And there's oftentimes it's the guilt of, hey, you know, I don't deserve this. I don't deserve to be here. Those Marines deserve it more. And that guilt, man, it's just always lingering. You know, it makes you, it's not eating away at me, because, you know, we try to maintain that PMA, that positive mental attitude, and always think about of the things that could be worse, but things can also be better, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And you know, this podcast is to help people understand emotions and feelings, but to develop an accurate way of thinking. And what you just, you know, told us is an example, a good example of that, how the emotion of guilt is always there, right? You're always feeling that emotion of guilt, but you're thinking through it, you know, right? Saying that, although I feel guilty, I'm still going to continue to live my life and not be paralyzed.
Right.
Make emotional decisions off of the guilt, which I think is commendable. And I appreciate you diving deeper into that emotion of guilt. Do you have any coping skill that you can teach us that you use to think and deal with that feeling, that constant feeling of guilt?
The coping mechanism for me is thinking about the family and the network of friends and brothers, right? In that, I look at the five Marines that are double amputee because of the event of December 7th, 2005. We had a Marine, one KIA, but we had multiple injuries, mass casualties, but the five amputees there. The fact that those Marines, Mario is such an amazing human being in that they're still thriving and living and enjoying life today. They didn't allow the injuries to hold them back. So I look up to them as an example, right? In that whatever emotions or whatever guilt I'm feeling, it's minute compared to the challenges that they're dealing with. So I kind of look at that. I look at the family. Hey, I'm not going to let my family down. I look at the Marines that we deploy with that, you know, they're a great example. Whatever we're dealing with, I'm not going to let that bother me, but I'm going to continue to do my best to take care of the family and take care of the veterans community and give back. So the coping experiences, the coping mechanism is that always reflecting back, breathe. I like to exercise, because I knew I was going to be coming up and talking to the motivator himself. I had to go get my 5K in this morning, you know, the 3 miles in to get that imagery up. So I do you justice, man.
You are far too kind. Ladies and gentlemen, I've known Mike for quite some time. He has not changed. Even on the virtual network platform, he has not changed. You know, Mike, thank you so much. You've inspired me. And is there any last, any words of wisdom you could leave our listeners and viewers?
Yeah, thanks again, Mario. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm humbled to be here with the greatest, right? The giant, the 5'3", 200-pound giant that is just amazing, yeah, to be a part of this program with you. I would advocate, or that not really an advice, but I would just share that, you know, Warrior Scholar Project is a phenomenal organization in that we want to help out as many service member and enlisted veterans as much as possible. So please utilize all your resources, all your veterans out there that are listening. Please don't be, I encourage you to look at all the resources, especially if you're looking to get into higher education. The Warrior Scholar Project is an underutilized gem. We want to spread the word and we want to help out as many veterans as possible.
No, thanks. You guys are doing great work at the Warrior Scholar Project. And how can listeners and viewers find you?
Yeah, Google Warrior Scholar Project, org. And we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on LinkedIn, Instagram, all that stuff. So please spread the word. All you leaders out there, hey, we're all about taking care of our Marines and sailors and soldiers and airmen. It's open to all enlisted veterans. So please check us out.
Ladies and gentlemen, you guys heard her from Mike Lamposen. You know, there's a lots of emotions out there, but the emotions of feeling guilty is a very powerful one. And he uses an accurate way of thinking through that to continue to do great things with the Warrior Scholar Project and also to advocate for veterans for higher education. Thank you again, my friend. And I can't wait to come to Florida and get on a boat with you.
Looking forward to it, Mario. Thank you again, brother.
Ladies and gentlemen, until next time, we'll see you later.
Thank you for listening to Unarmored Talk Podcast. Subscribe at www.unarmoredtalk.com to receive information on the release of upcoming episodes. Unarmored Talk Podcast is sponsored by Global Inspirational Speakers LLC, a inspirational speakers bureau that connects inspirational speakers to the world.